From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You folks sure do ask a lot of questions, which is good because our Ask Me Anything About Music series would be kind of lame without them. So today, we answer questions about the so-called Bakersfield sound and about the outlaw country hero, Willie Nelson. We've also got bilingual electropop from El Lado Negro live in the studio, and we have a question for you. What is the funniest song you know? Could be intentional, could be inadvertent. We're compiling a playlist of the funniest songs, and I'm sure Jack Black and Kyle Gass's group Tenacious D will get a few votes. After all, they wrote the greatest and best song ever.
This is the greatest and best song in the world.
So when the devil says he'll eat their souls if they don't play him the best song in the world, they're able to just whip it up right there on the spot. And this is that song. No, wait. This is the song where they talk about that song, right? The one that's the greatest song
he asked us, be you angels, and we said nay, we are but men.
Okay, now I'm all confused. Forget I said anything about Tenacious D. Just tell us who you think belongs on our funniest playlist ever. Leave your suggestion on our website at soundcheck.org, tweet us at soundcheck, or call our listener line at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. Our mailbox is always open, and from time to time, Soundcheck listeners send in a question that requires some in-depth conversation. We recently got one of those inquiries, and on the line is the inquirer herself, Katie Irish. Hi, Katie. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much.
So, tell us what your question was.
My question was, what was happening in Bakersfield, California that spawned its own sound in country music that became known as the Bakersfield sound?
Now, are you a country music fan?
I am. I like a lot of different types of music, but I do very much like the Bakersfield sound and Buck Owens and all of that, as well as more traditional country.
Okay. And do you, I mean, how did you first encounter this music?
I actually went to college in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and so you get acquainted with a lot of country music going to school in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay, I have never been to Tulsa, Katie. I am a Brooklyn boy, so I have asked someone whose country music bona fides are a lot stronger than mine to help answer your question. Again, Katie's question is, what is the Bakersfield sound? Why Bakersfield? And Jessie Scott is here with me. She is the director of Hill Country Live, the performance series here in New York and in D.C. that highlights American roots music. So, Jessie, first of all, welcome to Soundcheck.
It's good to be here.
What is the Baker? First of all, where is Bakersfield?
Bakersfield is in the San Joaquin Valley in California.
So it's north of L.A. and inland.
And in a growing area, you know, a migrant farmer area, a breadbasket.
Okay. And so what is the Bakersfield sound?
It is an amalgamation of early country that was a counterpoint to what was going on in Nashville at the time, which had started to get sweetened up, be more crooner, be less authentic and earthy.
So you get the string orchestra and the big choir in the background, and the Bakersfield guys were just like really rootsy and twangy and all that kind of stuff.
And to go back sort of before that, to lay the groundwork really for what it is, you have to look at Great Migrations. As so much of our music in America came out of the overlay of the different nationalities that, you know, populated, let's say, the Mississippi Delta or Oklahoma. Well, the Bakersfield sound is a direct migration from the Dust Bowl, from the Okies going out to California to seek their fortune.
So when our listener Katie mentioned going to school in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that is where that Bakersfield sound all the way over in California, that's the area where it comes from originally.
Exactly.
Neat. All right, so give us an example of what we're talking about.
Well, it's very Telecaster-driven.
The brand of guitar. Yeah.
And the fact is that, you know, it started in the honky-tonks. And again, they're migrant farmers. They're, you know, really simple lives. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to blow off some steam, and the music was there for that. So going to a honky-tonk in California probably was not populated by drums or bass, primarily pickers. So instead of it being strumming, it was very articulated. And as a call and response, the vocal and the guitar played counterpoint to one another.
Right.
So that's really the quintessential basis for what the Bakersfield sound is.
So give me a song that kind of crystallizes what we're talking about here.
There's a song that is credited from 1954. It's Louisiana Swing. Let's
All
listen
right.
to it.
This is Bud Hobbs and his Trail Herders.
Now, Bayou Baby's running wild, stealing kisses all the while, the love bug bites everyone in spring. Glowworms glowing in the dark, couples necking in the park when they do the Louisiana Swing. All Billy Woods from Bakersfield, yeah. Buck Owens, let's hear from you. In Big Mamou in Louisiana, they play a broken down piano. The people always gather round to sing. Now making eyes and holding hands, she's my woman, I'm her man, when we do the Louisiana Swing.
That is Bud Hobbs and his Trail Herders from 1954 with Louisiana Swing. And again, we're trying to answer a question from our listener, Katie, about what is the Bakersfield sound and why Bakersfield? It's where all these Okies, you know, during the Great Dust Bowl migration settled. Who is Buck Owens and why is he so crucial to this sound?
Some of this is credited with the work ethic, the enthusiasm, and the talent some of these folks brought to the table. And Buck was tireless. He was an ambassador for it. He worked all the time. It didn't matter what configuration, didn't matter whether his name was on the marquee or he was part of a combo or he was in the studio. You know, also is credited with bringing it down to Los Angeles to, you know, start populating some of the studios in the Los Angeles area. One of the other really critical factors was the radio station, because KUZZ was heard for the entirety of the San Joaquin Valley. So it wound up really influencing a lot of people.
What a great name for a radio station, too, because. So in 1965, Buck Owens and his Buckaroos have the number one song on the country charts with I've Got a Tiger by the Tail. Let's take a listen.
I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. Well, I'm a losing weight and a turning mighty pale. Looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. Lights are filmed. There ain't no way to slow you down. I'm about as helpless as a leaf in a gale, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger.
Buck Owens and his Buckaroos with a number one song from 1965, I've Got a Tiger by the Tail. We're answering our listener Katie's question about the Bakersfield sound, and joining me in the soundcheck studio is Jesse Scott. She's the director of Hill Country Live, the performance series here in New York and in Washington, D.C., that highlights American roots music. So, again, we're answering a question from our listener, Katie, and she's still on the line. And, Katie, you said before you are a country music fan. I'm just wondering, are you also a Rolling Stones fan?
I am, yes.
Do you know the song, The Girl with the Faraway Eyes?
Yeah, of course.
All right, because, I mean, you know, there's Mick Jagger talking about, being, you know, he's in the car and he's driving, listening to gospel music.
I was driving home early Sunday morning through Bakersfield, listening to gospel music on the colored radio station.
From Bakersfield.
Yep.
So, I mean, the reason I asked Katie that question, Jesse, is that, you know, we may not be going to the Stones right here, right now, but we are going to the Beatles. Why?
I think this is a time immemorial concept that our music, our American music, has been so well embraced and a shrine built to it in Europe before we even recognized its value. A lot of these were local movements, you know. They didn't necessarily cross-pollinate even to other areas of the country, yet that's part of the beauty of how our musics grew in America. But there you have the Rolling Stones and the Beatles paying attention to it and morphing it into the culture, into our culture, by their acknowledgement.
So the Beatles had already cottoned on to what was happening in Bakersfield before most of the rest of America had?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And so how do we hear that at play in their album Help?
Well, there's a cover. It's Act Naturally,
which is a Buck Owens song.
We'll make the scene about a man that's out and lonely and begging down upon his bended knee. I'll play the part and I won't need rehearsing. All I have to do is act naturally. Well, I bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star, 'cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movies. Then I'll know that you will plainly see the biggest fool that ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Well, again, there it is, that don't. I mean, that's like, I guess, the classic Bakersfield Telecaster guitar sound.
Definitive.
From the Beatles and their 1965 album Help, their version of the Buck Owens song Act Naturally. So, Jesse, if Buck Owens is a familiar name on the Bakersfield scene, Merle Haggard is like, you know, the household name. Tell us about him.
He had a very difficult childhood, wound up in jail. Music was the salvation.
So for him, when they termed him outlaw country, he really was outlaw.
Oh, yeah,
as a young man.
No doubt about it. You know, it was tough back in those days. There really was no grounding to your family. If the tumbleweed had blown you out, you tried to make it out of the land. Families broke apart. He was the recipient of, you know, some difficult times. And music was something that he could do that was a positive influence.
So was he like a formative figure, or is he standing on the shoulders of people like, you know, Buck Owens and Bud Hobbs?
There are some people that rose on their own, you know, pulled themselves up right by their bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Merle is an incredible treasure of an American songwriter. The fact is that this wasn't a machine so much. This wasn't about gatekeepers. This was about being able to put your songs out there and play them in the honky-tonks and create a fan base. This is very old school.
Right.
So Merle was, you know...
People liked him, I guess.
They loved him. He spoke to them.
I'm a Lonesome Fugitive is the name of this song, title track from Merle Haggard's 1967 album.
Down every road, there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home. I raised a lot of cane back in my younger days. While Mama used to pray my crops would fail. Now I'm a hunted fugitive with just two ways. Outrun the law or spend my life in jail. I'd like to settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road, there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
Merle Haggard and his 1967 album, I'm a Lonesome Fugitive, also the name of that song, another example of the so-called Bakersfield sound from Bakersfield, California, a city in the kind of inland part of the state. It's north of L.A., it's south of Fresno, and, you know, just a really important kind of, like a breadbasket for a certain kind of rootsy, twangy country music. Our listener Katie asking the question, what is the Bakersfield sound? Why Bakersfield? And Jessie Scott here to help answer the question. She's the director of Hill Country Live, the performance series here in New York and down in D.C. that highlights American roots music. And this is part of our occasional series that we call Ask John Schaefer Anything About Music. I needed some help answering this one, which is why Jessie's here. But you can ask your question by leaving it on our website at soundcheck.org. Or reach us on Facebook or Twitter, or you can call us at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. A woman asked the question. A woman is helping to answer the question. Are there women involved in the Bakersfield sound? So far, we've heard all guys.
Hallelujah, yes. Because for, again, that same egalitarian reason, if you were playing in a honky-tonk and you had a great picker and there was a female vocalist, there was no problem presenting that. Everybody embraced it. And there are many folks that have come out of that tradition. Barbara Mandrell, for one.
Really?
Yeah.
I think of her more as like a pop country kind of singer.
Embedded in her history is the Bakersfield sound.
What about someone like Emmylou Harris?
Totally.
Really?
Because Grant Parsons populated, again, some of the early Grant Parsons and then Flying Burrito Brothers music with these sounds.
And, of course, Grant Parsons and Emmylou Harris.
And Emmy,
of course. Having worked together. So who is Jean Shepherd?
Jean Shepherd is one of the first female proponents of the Bakersfield sound.
So this song by Jean Shepherd called A Dear John Letter, this is going back. This is 1953, so this must be pretty near the beginning of the style, of the sound.
It's credited as starting in the 50s. You know, though, the people migrated in the 30s and 40s,
right.
So the cauldron was at work already.
Let's hear Jean Shepherd with A Dear John Letter.
Dear John. overseas in battle. When the postman come to me and he handed me a letter, I was as happy as I could be. For the fighting was all over and the battle had been won. Then I opened up the letter and it started, "Dear John."
Dear John letter from 1953 by Jean Shepherd, one of the women associated with the Bakersfield sound. Our listener Katie asked, what is the Bakersfield sound? Why Bakersfield? Katie, how you feeling? Have you, you think you got a handle on this now?
I do. Thank you very much.
So the idea, Jesse, that, you know, the Dust Bowl migration, you know, there in the middle of California had these things coming together, the Western swing, the rockabilly, the honky-tonk saloon sound. It was a pretty kind of, I mean, it was a neat little moment in American music, I guess.
Totally. And I find it so interesting was we look at these different cities that you wouldn't expect to have anything going on, whether you talk Muscle Shoals or you talk Chicago Electric Blues, that they're so born of the moment of the population,
the place,
the migration,
and
you know, they were just going to do it.
Well, Katie, I'm really glad you asked this question because I've learned a lot about Bakersfield and the Bakersfield sound today. So, Katie, thanks for the question.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And Jesse, thanks for the answer.
Thank you.
And here's Dwight Yoakam with a song called Streets of Bakersfield.
Hey, you don't know me, but you don't like me. Say you're careless how I feel. But how many of you that sit and judge me ever walk the streets of Bakersfield?
Coming up, we'll explore the work of another country outlaw who became a star when he turned his back on Nashville to do things his way, the great Willie Nelson. And later, the artist known as El Lado Negro joins us in the studio. This is Soundcheck.
Well, it's a bloody merry morning, baby, left me without warning sometime in the night.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Recently, we've been helping people get smarter about their musical blind spots. Today, how to be smarter about Willie Nelson. Joining me in the studio is the country singer, songwriter, longtime WFMU radio host, and sometimes Soundcheck guest host, Laura Cantrell. Laura, welcome back.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.
So this guy has a huge body of work, and it was tough for you to kind of zero in on specific songs.
Absolutely tough to pick three out of, you know, hundreds, literally, that you could pick from.
But the first track that you picked, the first kind of essential Willie Nelson track, doesn't even feature Willie Nelson.
Well, in the late 50s and early 60s, Willie Nelson was out kind of fighting his way through the honky-tonks and Texas bars and kind of honing his craft, and he wrote a batch of songs that he brought to Nashville in the early 1960s. Crazy, the one that I picked, that I suggested we feature the Patsy Cline version,
sure,
is the best of the bunch, although it's a great bunch of songs. Funny How Time Slips Away, The Nightlife Is No Good Life. These are songs that have been covered by hundreds of artists. And right away, Willie Nelson sort of grabbed Nashville songwriting community's ear because these were very unique country tunes. They were not... they were more melodically sophisticated and harmonically sophisticated. They let the singers who chose to sing them have a kind of bigger platform to show their gifts, their vocal talents. So, you know, it's funny. There are stories that Patsy Cline didn't even like the song Crazy because she didn't think it was country enough. But it suited her ability to sing so well that it showed people that country music could be something beyond, you know, what we think of as like the Hank Williams style of song or the typical songs of the 1950s.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling. I know. me as long as you wanted, and then someday you'd leave me for somebody new.
A little bit of Crazy, big hit for Patsy Cline in 1962, but written by a young Willie Nelson. And Laurie, you mentioned before that Patsy Cline didn't even like the song at first, didn't think it was country enough. It did hit almost the very top of the country charts, but tellingly also hit the top 10 in the pop charts.
That's right, and it really launched her into people's awareness as a great vocalist far beyond the confines of country music. So, you know, it was a great vehicle for her talent and came along right at the right time.
Yeah, and I think there are probably lots of people who love that song and didn't necessarily think of it as a country tune.
Absolutely.
So how does this young guy, as you say, you know, plying his trade in the juke joints and the bars and the barbecues of Texas, how does he come to this kind of sophisticated songwriting?
You know, he grew up very steeped in Western swing, but also, like many people of his generation, the mass communication of the day was the radio. So everybody heard, you know, the pop sounds of big band music, the hit parade. These were things my dad's family in West Tennessee, they loved the hit parade. They didn't just listen to the Grand Ole Opry. Willie absorbed all of those things along with the kind of more native music in Texas, you know, which was different than country music in the East. You know, it was not as Appalachian. It had a wider range of sort of undertones in it.
Well, Western swing had a strong kind of big band flavor.
Absolutely.
To it.
Absolutely. Solos were played by horns and fiddles and guitars. So, you know, Willie grew up very steeped in all of that tradition.
Okay. Part of our How to Be Smarter About series today, focusing in on Willie Nelson. And Laura Cantrell's with me, the country singer-songwriter and occasional soundcheck guest host. So did Willie go to Nashville thinking that he would be a songwriter, or did he go with the intent that he would make his own career in his own way as a singer?
Well, I think he always had an idea of himself as an artist. So he went hoping to first make a living, and he certainly was able to do that as a songwriter and was very much established as a songwriter that could supply songs to a lot of hit artists, Ray Price, Farron Young, etc. But he also joined the Grand Ole Opry early on as a performer, and he had ambition to be able to play the music as he felt it as well. And at that, in the early 60s, he wasn't so successful. He wasn't really taken that seriously by the Nashville musical establishment as a solo artist. They thought of him as a little bit too odd to have a mainstream audience.
And was he too odd?
Well, he could have been seen to be a bit odd, you know, with these different different types of music that he could play. His music was a little bit darker. His songs had, again, this melodic and harmonic range that were different. He played guitar a little bit a different way. It was more, you know, you could almost hear even early on the influence of Django Reinhardt, which was one of his favorite artists.
The gypsy jazz guitars.
That was something that all the, you know, hip session players in Nashville would love that music, but they weren't getting paid to play that to a mass audience. So Willie was trying, he was ahead of his time in the early 60s, and he didn't sink right into the commercial music industry.
So how does Willie Nelson become a big star on his own?
Well, after a few things happened in the late 60s in Nashville, he decided to relocate back to Texas. And it was kind of a big lifestyle choice for him. He wanted to go back to where he wasn't, you know, thought of as the songwriter who won't be an artist. And he just started playing music. And he relocated near where his sister Bobby lived. And he put a band together there. They had played together since they were children before he came to Nashville. She's a piano player. And he starts, when he goes home to Texas, forming this band that he calls the Family Band. And it's himself, his sister Bobby, and then a sort of bunch of like-minded folks. Mickey Raphael, the harmonica player, who's been a signature part of the Willie Nelson sound for many years. And they decide they can play whatever they want, and they don't have to worry about what someone in a studio in Nashville thinks is commercial. And if that's, you know, R&B and blues or a swing tune from the 40s, whatever they want to do, is it's an more open-minded approach. And this kind of synced up with, you know, the college kids in Austin, the people being a little bit more open-minded in that early 70s about what the boundaries of many types of music could be.
Yeah. So when we get to 1980 and the hit On the Road Again, this is his ninth, by this point, his ninth number one song.
Yes.
So through the 70s, he is making his way.
That's right. He becomes
his own way.
Yes, well, I failed to mention that along the way, this type of music that he was playing became called the outlaw movement. And so
outlaw country.
Along with, Jerry Jeff Walker and Waylon Jennings and
Chris Christopherson,
all these folks became, this idea coalesced that they had started making music their own way.
Nothing too outlawish about this, but it didn't stop it from hitting number one on the country charts, Willie Nelson.
On the road again, just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
Willie Nelson's hit, On the Road Again, from the 1980 album Honeysuckle Rose. Boy, he meant every word of that, didn't he, Laura?
It's a real mission statement.
And he's still a road warrior.
Absolutely.
To this day.
He pretty much lives on the road.
So he's got that bus, the famous bus. You open the door and a cloud of smoke comes out. Is his affection for weed overstated, do you think?
Absolutely not.
Have you been on the bus?
I've been on the bus a few times. And I don't know if you remember, famously, a few years ago, the bus was parked somewhere in Manhattan. People didn't realize it was the Willie Nelson bus. And there were complaints that there was a bus with an odd smell coming out of it. So, no, I think it's all, he's very much, you know, as you sort of see the legend about him, he's very much like that.
Okay. Laura Cantrill is talking to us about Willie Nelson, part of our How to Be Smarter series today, How to Be Smarter About Willie Nelson. So folks who might know of his occasional run-ins with the law and judges saying, I'm not going to throw you in jail, but you got to do a free concert for us or whatever.
Right.
These things hit the newspapers occasionally. So for people who know that about Willie Nelson, but are now wondering, gee, maybe I should check this guy out. Where should they go? What's an album or two that people should pick up?
Well, I think there's a pair of albums from the 70s that sort of signaled to me the sort of breadth of Willie Nelson. One is Redheaded Stranger, the concept album built around the tale of a preacher who's murdered his wife.
Don't cross him, don't boss him. He's wild in his sorrow. He's hiding his pain. Don't fight it, don't spite it, just wait till tomorrow. Maybe he'll ride on again.
So that album was, you know, very unique in the 1970s, and it holds up to this day as a real example of what Willie could do, you know, as an artist himself, not just with hit songs, but with taking folk music and weaving it into, you know, his view of what country music could be. I would pair that with another album from the 70s called Stardust, which is his standards album. And that one is just a great example of him as a player, as someone who could take the song Blue Skies and, you know, an old swing tune and play it, breathe all this new life into it, have the Django guitar and the Willie Nelson, Mickey Raphael harmonica and his wonderful singing, which is very jazz influenced as well. And I think if you take those two records, you understand why musicians take him seriously and why he became broader than what we think of as kind of commercial country in any era.
Right. So two records. People still call him the Redheaded Stranger.
That's true.
but the Stardust record, this is 1978. This is before Rod Stewart started doing,
true,
you know, old songs, before Brian Ferry started. You know, those were the we think of those guys as the early ones to start the whole trend of reinventing
standards,
old standards. But Willie Nelson was there first with this version of Blue Skies.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Nothing but blue skies from now on. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly by. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on.
Singer and songwriter Willie Nelson here in an album of covers, doing sort of classic American standards like Blue Skies. The album was called Stardust, came out in 1978. Laura, this to me was the record that was like, oh, so he's not just the country music guy.
Well, and also remember, he'd been selling a lot of records as an outlaw.
Right.
I'm putting that in quotes
yes,
at this point.
Outlaw country,
you know,
now.
He definitely, surprised a lot of people with this record. And I think it's still the foundation of why you can see occasionally Willie Nelson with Wynton Marsalis or Nora Jones or these serious musicians from other schools of music, because they understand he's capable of this level of musicality.
But you also will find Willie Nelson with Snoop Dogg or with, you know, sort of harder to define artists like the Tin Hat Trio.
Right.
You know, he's collaborated across a huge swath of the music world. What is it about him that kind of gives him that broad-based appeal?
I think, you know, he's kind of now the icon Willie Nelson. So people do come to him almost like, you know, they do come to touch the hem of the garment in a way, or to get something passed to them in the bus. I don't know. But, you know, I think that he has this real sort of ageless, timeless appeal. And certainly that extends to musicians. I also think as an artist, he's been a very hungry, he's kept a hunger to keep making music.
Have you worked with him?
I've not worked with him. I have observed him in working in several different settings. And I've always been amazed at just how there seems to be always a project, one on deck and one, you know, one in the making and one that they're working on now releasing. And there's just this flow of music that, you know, he's been working on for many, many years. It's almost inexhaustible. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from his desire to stay current as an artist and stay, you know, making music that he feels good about.
Well, being current, I mean, you can't do much better than having a number one album on the charts, which his last record did do on the country charts, the record Band of Brothers.
He's had this staying power because he, you know, he is fascinating to people, and he's remained that because he's still active as an artist.
Well, Laura, I feel a little smarter about Willie Nelson now. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Laura Cantrell, the country singer and songwriter, longtime WFMU radio host, and occasionally has sat in this chair on Soundcheck. And we mentioned Band of Brothers. We'll wrap up with The Wall from that album by Willie Nelson.
I took on more than I could handle. I bit off more than I could chew. I hit the wall. I went off like a Roman candle, burning everyone I knew. I hit the wall. I hit the wall. And the wall came down, crashing down. There was not a sound.
Up next on the show, have you ever listened to tinsel dancers on the radio? No? That's because they don't make any noise. They're dancers wearing tinsel. But you can and should watch them at soundcheck.org while listening to our live session with Elado Negro. Log on and listen in next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Brooklyn-based musician Roberto Lang performs under the name Elado Negro, and he has tapped into the past for his latest record called Double Youth. The songs were inspired in part by a long-lost childhood photograph. We'll hear all about it, and we'll hear some songs as well here in the Soundcheck studio. And this is one of those occasions where you will want to check out the video for reasons that will become plain later on. Here is Elado Negro live on Soundcheck with a grammatically challenged song called Are I Here? That is Elado Negro, the work of singer and songwriter Roberto Lang, here live in the Soundcheck studio. That song is called Are I Here, and it comes from the latest Elado Negro record, which is called Double Youth. So, Roberto Lang singing and handling a very colorful table full of electronic gear here in the studio. Roberto, welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
With Xenia Rubinos helping out on vocals. Xenia, good to see you again.
Great to see you.
Xenia was here just about a year ago doing some of her own music. And then there are the three members of the band that nobody heard, but who are certainly here kind of creeping me out, I gotta say. You're three tinsel dancers. what's happening there, Roberto?
I guess it's a long story, but I guess the best way to describe it, it's just something about just being mindful of your eyeballs and not so much just your ears. And in a performance setting, there's so much to deal with, and there's a lot of stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm doing these performances, it's exciting for me to have a way to treat all of these performances uniquely and make sure that when people are going to their favorite club in whatever city, that they don't, that it changes their perspective on the place that they're at. So we right. can kind of redefine where they're at and maybe warp them to somewhere else.
Yeah. With three people who are encased head to toe in tinsel. I mean, you can't even tell, you know, who's under there, although I know that it's Christy Sword, Lara Sturgis, and Gosvinda Vizaratea, yeah. who are your tinsel dancers here in the studio. You know, if you mic'd them up and actually asked them to move a bit, it would kind of create a kind of neat shh.
Yeah, there's a beautiful texture, really beautiful texture.
Did you make these things?
I did. I made them for a performance I did in Mexico earlier this year called Vive Latino. And so that was the reason why they came to initially, the inception of it was that I was trying to control the stage during the day and try to create some way to, because I'm by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
So to draw focus.
So very glad that we are shooting video of this live set from Helado Negro, black ice cream, right?
Yeah.
Is there black ice cream? What flavor would that be?
It's me. It's my flavor.
It's not like a licorice thing or something.
No, I think it's developed into this idea of what, just a different flavor that you haven't had yet. And mm-hmm. it's a mystery.
Right. Well, now, speaking of mysteries, this album Double Youth is inspired by the cover that we see on the photo of two young boys. You are one of them.
I am.
Both of you looking very seriously at the camera. Both of you in face paint. Who's the other boy?
One is me and one's my cousin. Yeah.
Okay.
But I haven't, it's not like a huge secret which one's me, but I haven't, the one with all of the face paint is me.
Uh-huh.
And then the other person's my cousin.
Did you know that was your cousin when you found this, or was it?
I did, absolutely. I just, what it was like, I was like, oh, this is my cousin, but I just don't remember. I through putting it scientifically, putting together, like, this was probably shot at the Dade County Youth Fair, and I kind of figured out, like, understood, but I have no recollection of what, where the photo happened, or when it happened, I mean.
Where'd you find it?
It was in a closet in my mom's home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you grew up in Florida.
Yeah.
And have been living and working here in New York now for a number of years, different projects.
For 8 years now, yeah.
You know? And now, you know, you and Xenia are performing here in the studio today. Xenia, Roberto does all of his own vocals on the record, so how did you guys come to work together?
Well, I was really lucky to meet Roberto about a year ago, I think, doing a show. We did it.
Oh, yeah, maybe it was a year ago.
Yeah, yeah, like last summer. Did a show together. And
it was like ages.
Yeah, it does feel like ages. And I was lucky enough to get called to sing on a couple songs today. And I was like, are you kidding? Yes, please.
Roberto, do you follow Xenia on Twitter?
I do.
Yeah? Did you see what she tweeted out today?
That she had a radio crush?
No, I wasn't even getting to that part. I was
sorry.
Singing with one of my faves, Helado Negro, on soundcheck. And then, yes, bonus, I get to fangirl John Schaefer, hashtag radio crush. What are we going to do with her?
Why?
Just keep bringing her back.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean,
I'm glad we're not videotaping this part, because I'm turning different colors.
Well,
I'm glad you're having fun.
I am having fun.
That's great.
So I'm glad the two of you are here. You want to sing some more for us?
Absolutely.
All right. Ojos que no ven. Eyes that can't see?
Yeah, coincidentally, it's the story was inspired. The song was inspired through a story that was told from a friend of a friend's father who, he got older and he got sick and he lost his vision. He said the interesting thing about going blind is that none of your friends get older. They all stay young. And that, like, really was...
Wow.
It was kind of like this a really positive outlook on something that's pretty devastating, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was that's what inspired the song.
All right, let's hear it. The performance by Helado Negro. The song appears on the album Double Youth, which is out now. Helado Negro performing here in New York. You'll have two chances to catch them. October 5th at Baby's All Right, and November 2nd just up the road at SOB's here in Lower Manhattan. So here's Roberto and Zenia and the Three Tinsel Dancers and another live performance here on Soundcheck.
Ojos que no ven, no dan un reflejo. Ojos que no dan, no dan un espejo. Ábrete. Llámame, llámame, llámame.
Once again, live music from Helado Negro on Soundcheck. The album Double Youth is out now. That song is on it, but you've just heard a live performance. Ojos que no ven is the name of it. Roberto Lang singing and handling the electronics. And once again, Zenia Rubinos helping out with more vocals. And the Three Tinsel Dancers. Can they see through those things?
Can you all see through everything? Can you see through everything? They're shaking their heads. They said yes.
That looked like a no to me. That looked like a shake of the head as opposed to a nod. I don't think they can see under those things. They look like something out of a sci-fi ghost story, and they're just kind of like standing, slowly moving while you guys are singing and playing. That song was in Spanish. All I Hear is bilingual. There are other songs on the record that are in English. How do you make that decision? Does the song tell you what language it wants to be in?
Absolutely. I think it's just more of me treating the lyrics and my voice and the language as an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
In whichever order, really. It's kind of however things shape out to be.
So there's no... do you tend to write the lyrics first?
No. A lot of times what happens is, as I'm writing, I'm shaping sounds with my mouth. And as I'm shaping the sounds, I start hearing words. And then one word happens to be in English and the other one happens to be in Spanish. And then I figure out how I can make a story or some kind of weird something out of it.
Well, now we were talking before about, you know, the genesis of this record with this photograph, this long-lost family photograph that you found. So are things like memory and retrospection and nostalgia, are they kind of themes on this record?
Yeah, and I think it's themes throughout a lot of my work. It's these non-chronological stitched together memories where it's like start singing about something that may have happened to me when I was 6, and then all of a sudden something that happened 5 minutes ago. So there's a lot of these kind of like, how can I fill in the gap with this next part? What makes the most sense?
Roberto Lang is Helado Negro. The album's called Double Youth. It is out now. And Roberto, it's been great having you and Xenia and the dancers here with us in the studio. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow on the show, as the mastermind behind the indie group The Mountain Goats, John Darnielle has gained a reputation as one of rock's great storytellers. Recently, though, he's been working on a bigger canvas. He'll tell us about his new novel, his second, called Wolf in White Van. Plus, the Chilean folk singer Victor Jara was killed by his own government in September 1973, but he's been back in the news these last few weeks. We'll find out why and listen to some of his stirring work tomorrow. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.